They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:23, Wednesday, June 8th. This is the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the Associate Editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. I want to extend congratulations to our friend John Green, who is now a member of the Breeders' Cup Board of Directors, and he was so excited, he took an entire week off to celebrate. John, I don't know where you are.
Good morning. I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. Later on in the show, we're going to unveil this week's Remy cartoon. And spoiler alert, it's a caricature of the three of us on the show. I have a major bone to pick with Mr. Bullock. He's got me wearing a Patriots shirt. I hate the Patriots. Remy, it's the Red Sox, pal. Come on. How can you miss that? Patriots, Tom Brady, Bill, no, go away, Bill Belichick. No good.
How did I never know that about you, that you hate the Patriots?
Yeah, I can't stand them.
But who do you root for in football? Anybody?
Whoever the Patriots are playing.
Oh, okay, wow. So Bill and I have more in common than I thought. Okay, love to hear it. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September Yearling Sale beginning Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. So we're 3 days away from the blockbuster Belmont Stakes cards, one of the best cards of the year. Usually we talk to Terry Finley from West Point, obviously, about Flightline. And I think Flightline is going to be a headline attraction on Saturday. The Belmont Stakes obviously is the Belmont, but with no Triple Crown on the line, even with Rich Strike running in the race, I think Flightline is the major, major attraction of the day. Overall, we have 8 grade ones and a grade two, so 9 graded stakes overall. And Bill, I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but again, we got a lot of short fields. We got 5 horses in the Acorn. We got 5 horses in the Just a Game. We have 6 horses in the Woody Stevens. In the Ogden Phipps, we have 5 horses. I mean, it starts to get a little better as the card goes on. The Jiper has 13. The Met has 5. You'd expect it to be a short field with Flightline in there. The Manhattan has 10, and then the Belmont has 8. Overall, I think it's a quality over quantity card. You're going to get to see a lot of stars, and we'll talk about them. But again, man, why can't these races fill?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not being a Debbie Downer because you have to talk about this. It's a major story, Joe. And, you know, in some way, shape, and form, it's kind of the story of the day, sort of overshadowing. Well, it's not the story of the day, but it's one of the stories of the day, overshadowing other things. And, you know, but it's a little bit of the good and the bad. The good is that there are some spectacular horses running on this card. Jack Christopher, Flightline, Speaker's Gun. This is not even talking about the Belmont Stakes. Jackie's Warrior, Latruska. I mean, champions up and down the card, races that, you get excited about because you want to see stars. But from a standpoint of a betting, it's, how do you get excited about betting some of these races with 5 horses, 6 horses, et cetera? And even the Belmont Stakes only has 8 horses in it. This was supposed to be such a wide open year. I'm surprised there's not more. I asked Randy Moss when he was our Green Group guest of the week last week, what do we do about this problem? And his answer was the same of all of us. Just shrugged his shoulders. I don't know. There's too much racing out there. There's too many stakes races out there. But can you expect a Naira to say, we're not going to run the Met Mile this year, or we're going to get rid of it because it doesn't attract a lot of horses, or the Ogden Phipps? It's just not going to happen. So, I guess we just got to grit our teeth and put up with it. But it'll be interesting to see how this affects the handle. And I don't remember exactly what the card was like last year or what the average field size is. But, you have a Belmont again that's not going to really resonate much with the masses. It's going to, the racing people are going to be into it. So you're not going to get a lot of money from people that bet 3-4 times a year. At least I don't think you're going to get a lot. Will the handle be affected by this? It probably will. So again, I don't want to go all negative here. Just like you said, you don't want to be a Debbie Downer because, as I said before, this is must-see racing coverage because of the stars that I'm talking about. And in some respects, an interesting Belmont, not a scintillating Belmont, but an interesting Belmont. But, at some point in time, can we get everybody in the same room and just trying to figure out, is there a better way to do this? I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know what the answer is, but it's one of the stories of the day, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's just one of those cards, those typical cards that you get sometimes where, from a fan's perspective, I cannot wait. It's just there's so many horses that I want to see that are appointment viewing for me. But from a betting perspective, it is very, very hard to get excited about this card. The only thing maybe is like maybe the late pick four or something, because like I mentioned, the Jiper has 13 horses in it. And then you got a couple of other like semi big fields, you know, like 10 in the Manhattan, like I said. But yeah, like Star Studded does not even begin to describe this card. It's like, you know, we got Echo Zulu and the Acorn. In the Just a Game, we got five horses. Chad has three of them, but Regal Glory and Speak of the Devil, who I, you know, raved about in the Distaff Turf Mile, she's going to be in there. The Woody Stevens, obviously, Jack Christopher is the main attraction. But you've got also got Morello coming back, who was the Gotham winner, and he missed the Derby after a pretty poor start in the Wood Memorial. So he's in there as well as Wit. So that's exciting. Obviously, the Ogden Phipps, you know, Latruska is always important to watch and is always, you know, always puts on a show. You know, not a ton of competition in there. I guess Malathat, you know, if she gets you excited, I, you know, coming off that very workmanlike win in the double dog there, I don't think she's going to be any match for Malathat. And of course, in the Met Mile, Flightline, it's just every time I see Flightline's past performances, I have to do a double take, because you just don't see horses run a 105, a 114, 118 buyer winning by double digits each time. So he is obviously a super exciting horse. But this is not a walkover for him. And Terry Finley, you know, talked about it when we asked him. Speaker's Corner is a real horse. You know, he got a 114 buyer in the Carter last time out. He's won three in a row. He, to me, is on the ascent also. You do have Aloha West in there, who did win the Breeders' Cup Sprint last year, but he's just on paper way too slow for those two horses. So it sets up as a pretty decent match race for Flightline and Speaker's Corner. It's be interesting to see how the race is ridden, because those two are the two inside posts and the two main speeds. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if Junior lays off of Flavian on Speaker's Corner, if Flavian just sends Flightline to the front and says, you know, come get me if you can. That's going to be a really interesting riders race to see how those two guys kind of jockey for position in the early going. You know, and then in the Belmont, I have said for a while now that I think We the People is a likely winner of this race. I, you know, maybe if you like Creative Cause, he's kind of a forward moving call. I could see a case for him. I don't like Rich Strike. I don't, you know, Bill did a story yesterday that he was on the vets list. You know, they supposedly had a very, you know, benign explanation for it, but it's just not something you want to see going into a big race. You know, I think also that We the People is the controlling speed. He drew the rail. So that takes, I think, all of the, you know, all of the decision making out of it for Flavian Pratt. I think it makes all the sense in the world now just to go to the front. And then, of course, we get the filly in the race, Nest. And we talked to Mike Rapoli a couple of weeks ago when he was considering it. You know, she ran second in the Oaks. She's too slow on paper, but if she truly does want to go a mile and a half and they think that she's going to get better at that distance, why not take a shot instead of just running her against Echo Zulu at a mile in the Acorn, which is really not up her alley. But any other thoughts on the Belmont specifically, Bill?
Yeah, first of all, I got to correct myself. I said Jackie's Warrior was part of the card. He's not. He's racing on Friday. But two things. Let's take one race at a time. And, you know, it's interesting because guys like us and John, you, me and John, we're going to be zeroed in on the Met Mile. I mean, I don't care what happens in the Belmont Stakes that, you know, We the People runs after the screen and wins by 10 lengths. It's not going to be as impactful or interesting as what happens in the Met Mile, because here we have a horse that, you know, looks like he in Flightline, looks like he might be one of the fastest horses we've seen in our lifetime, but he still has to prove it in a race like this. And this is a litmus test for him. I mean, I know he won the Grade One Malibu, but, you know, this is a litmus test for him and going against a horse like Speaker's Corner. You know, maybe he'll get beat. Maybe he'll win by a half length. But what if he just thrashes this field and goes off and wins by 7-8 lengths and gets a 120 buyer? All of which is completely within the realm of possibility. I mean, come Sunday morning, that's all Joe Bianca, Bill Finley, John Green, and the real insiders are going to be thinking about. But, you know, it's still Belmont Day, and the more casual racing fan is going to zero in on the Belmont. And, Joe, I'm with you. I mean, the PPs came out last night, and I'm not going to make my pick now, but We the People, not only is he a good horse in here, on the rise for Rudolph Brissett, coming off a big win in the Peter Pan. But could he be 6-7 lengths in front after a half mile? That sounds like at first blush, like, nah, that'll never happen. But he's that fast, and there's no one it could, looks like that they can even come close to keeping up with him early. It'll be interesting to see how he's ridden. Will they go to the front and try to go in like 48 and open up by 10? Or will they try to get to the front in a length and a half and go in 50, something like that? I'm not sure that the former isn't the better strategy. Just take it to them out of the gate, dare them to come catch me, and just run off the screen. I mean, Rich Strike is an easy horse to dislike. I mean, there is the Cinderella story and all that, but he did win the Kentucky Derby largely because of a pace meltdown. And, you know, that's not going to happen here. You're not going to get We the People and someone else going 45 in the first half mile here. So, you know, he's obviously better than we thought he was going into the Derby. But, you know, he doesn't look like a horse that you really would expect to win this race. Mo Donegal, Ness, Todd Pletcher, I mean, he's very good at this, bringing these horses into the Belmont off the 5 weeks rest in between their two starts. It would be neat to see the filly win. I'm not going to knock the Belmont, but I'm not going to say at the same time, oh boy, what an exciting, great Belmont it is.
Yeah, it doesn't have quite the cachet last year when you got Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie in there, and horses that you really felt were kind of at the top of the three-year-old division at the time. You know, obviously Rich Strike has the Derby win under his belt, but he's got nothing else on his resume. You know, I don't want to trash him too much, because as you'll see in the cartoon later, we might have to have Rich Strike on the show if we doubt him again. He wins the Belmont, but yeah, it's interesting. I haven't really seen this in a while. In the Belmont, you have the horses who were 17th or 18th in Rich Strike's case, 19th in Mo Donegal's case, and then Barbara Road 20th or 19th in the first calls of the Derby. So you have all of the deep closers from the Derby, and it just sets up for We the People. It might be one of those things where it seems too obvious and then he doesn't win, because he does really only have that one big race in the Peter Pan, and he's probably going to be a short price. So I definitely would not suggest betting him at, you know, 7-5 or 8-5 or whatever he's going to be. But, you know, he looks like he can't lose on paper, unless someone, you know, like Skippy Longstocking or somebody unexpectedly goes with him early. And then who knows? Then you know, you could take any of three or four horses. Like I said, Creative Ministers, a little bit interesting, lightly raced, like I said. The other thing about this, Bill, is, you know, I think it kind of throws a wrench into like what Randy Moss and people who were, you know, in favor of elongating the Triple Crown say. We only had three horses run in the Preakness after running in the Derby, and we still only got eight horses in the Belmont. So I don't buy this idea that just because you give the trainers more space, they're more likely to show up in the Triple Crown races, because it's not as if half the field ran in the Preakness and is now too tired to run in the Belmont. We only had a couple of horses run in the Preakness after the Derby, and still we only got eight horses. Like, I think that makes a case that no matter how much you space these races, trainers are going to find a way to duck and find an easier spot.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And kind of a forgotten horse, but I think he's a good example of what we've been talking about, people on our side. Look at Zandon. He would be the favorite in this race. He would be the favorite in the Belmont Stakes, one of the most illustrious races on the calendar, $1.5 million purse. It's 5 weeks after he last ran, 5 weeks. And that wasn't enough time for Chad Brown to bring him back. You know, and again, like we said, and I don't want to continue to, you know, we need to move on from this. But, you know, like I said, the whole idea that people are saying about 4 weeks in between the races is not going to work. It's not going to make it any better. If horses come back in the Preakness, then they just won't come back in the Belmont. Are we really going to have 8 weeks between all these races? Of course not. We can't. So, you know, there's something that can't be fixed. But I just think Zandon is a perfect example of the way, and it gets worse every single year. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, Chad Brown never would have dreamt, I don't think, of keeping Zandon out of the Belmont. But nope, now 5 weeks, not nearly enough time. We'll see in the summer. We'll see at the Traverse or whatever like that. And it's not good for the game, but it is the way that it is.
So. Right. And it's becoming the standard. And that's why we have these 5 and 6 horse fields and all these great stakes. But we'll end it on a positive note. 8 grade ones. It's hard to be too negative about a card with that many big time stakes and big time horses running in it. So, of course, we're looking forward to it, even if we're complaining about the short fields. I think both things can be true. You can, you know, be a little depressed about how many short fields we see in these big races. But also you can be excited to see the horses that are going to be out there on Saturday. And I'll be out there on Saturday, probably get there, you know, for the first grade one. And I might actually leave after the Met just to,
wow.
to beat the traffic home because, you know, I don't know. The Manhattan doesn't get me going. And the Belmont, you know, this year it's a nice enough race, but it's like it's such a mad dash to get out of there after the Belmont. I might dip after the Met Mile. So if you're out there and you want to, you know, meet up and grab a drink or something, just hit me in my DM. So looking forward to seeing some people out there at Belmont Center. It looks like the weather's going to cooperate, and it'll be, you know, even if it's not a great betting day, it'll be a great day of racing for fans, and we're looking forward to seeing a lot of those horses. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. 7 of the 8 horses in this weekend's Belmont are alumni of the Keeneland sales, including Morning Line favorite We the People, cost $220,000 at Keeneland September, as well as second choice Mo Donegal. It's a $250,000 September grad. 9 of the past 16 Belmont winners have come from Keeneland sales. And the first feature from our new Breeder Spotlight series, which is presented in partnership with Keeneland, Chris McGrath highlights Wayne Lister's Ashview Farm, who is the co-breeder of Belmont contenders Mo Donegal and Ness. So that's a pretty big accomplishment to be on the breeding line for two Belmont contenders. The 2 3-year-olds actually sold on the same day at the 2020 Keeneland September sale. And in the article, Wayne talks about how their horses are raised naturally, even down to the hay they eat that's grown there on the farm. Really, really interesting read. Chris is obviously a great writer. You can check it out on our website. It's called Belmont Pair, our latest A-lister. So definitely go check that out. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
He was just put together like a machine, and he had a great mind. Everything about him was what you'd want.
Tis the Law pops the cork in the champagne. Tis the Law is going to win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
I've never seen him get tired.
Respect the Law. Tis the Law.
His structure is just perfect. His bone is perfect.
He's left the others behind. He's going to win the run, Happy Travers.
He's everything you would look for in a horse.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Ashford sire Munnings took the lead on the general sires list by stakes winners this weekend when his son Nimitz Class won the Danzig Stakes. Munnings now has 11 stakes winners this year and 17 stakes performers, another proven successful sire at Ashford. A little horse by the name of Uncle Mo will be represented by Mo Donegal in this week's Belmont. And I also noticed, in terms of his intake, in terms of his crop, Cupid is now top 5. And I, you know, I've seen him climb up those rankings, but he's top 5 in terms of graded stakes horses, I believe. And you know, that's the crop with Gunrunner in it. So he's definitely climbing up that list, and you know, still a huge bargain over there at Coolmore. Don't need prompting to plug my boy Cupid. So definitely go check him out at a very, very reasonable price. And obviously all of the bigger price horses at Coolmore, definitely worth visiting as well. So we'd like to welcome in a very special guest right now, all the way from Ocala, Florida, taking a break from buying horses. New Breeders' Cup Board of Directors member, John Green. Welcome, John. Congratulations.
Why, thank you, Joe Bianca and Bill Finley. It's wonderful to be able to see you and not be sweating down here.
So we want to talk about this a little bit because, you know, we're less than a month away from the implementation date of HISA, which is July 1st. Obviously, the drug and medication policy stuff has to wait a little bit longer, but everybody's got to get registered. Every owner, trainer, backstretch worker, jockey, anybody who works with horses has to be registered with HISA by July 1st. Otherwise, it's been reported that there could possibly be scratches as a result if you're not registered. So that's been a big scramble for a lot of people to try to get registered. And there's have been some hiccups or some issues and some questions. And TDN has done a really good job, actually. Dan Ross has done a really good column the last week or so, HISA questions and answers. And people will send in questions, and he'll get the answers for them. So if you want to know more than just this little segment we'll provide, I would definitely suggest reading Dan's columns. But I thought it would be good to have John on, since he is an owner, since he's the only one out of the three of us has to register for HISA, and to have him talk a little bit about his experience. What, John, what was it like? Was it hard? Was there any kind of difficulties? What was it like to sign up?
Yeah, guys, you know, I'm actually happy to report that registering on the HISA website was actually easier than I thought. And I am certainly not a mental giant. So it was good that it was pretty straightforward. It really, all you need is your name, your date of birth, and an active license. And an active, for me, it would be an active owner's license. And it doesn't matter what state it is, as long as it's one of the United States. Canadian licenses don't work. So that's first and foremost. So if you're going to choose one of your licenses to put the information in, don't choose Canada. So I use my New York license. I put in, you know, the basic information, my name, address, and contact number. And then I uploaded my license as an owner, my NYRA license. And within 10 seconds, all of my information uploaded immediately. I just double checked it to make sure it was correct. And then really the hardest thing was, and I think they've fixed this now, the hardest thing was once I hit confirm and sent it, you're supposed to get a confirmation number back. And then once you get that confirmation number, you re-input it. And that way they know that you're confirmed and you're registered. At the time they were having issues with it. And I think since that moment, they've gotten rid of the double confirmation. So I did end up getting an email about, maybe later on in the day saying that I was confirmed. They gave me a confirmation number. And I logged in again last night just to reconfirm that I was on there. And thankfully I am. And it looks like it's very straightforward.
Well, that's good news. Frankly, since USADA bailed out and there's no USADA involved with the Horse Racing Integrity Safety Act, I don't care. That's all I have to say.
Jesus, Bill.
Why? Who cares?
But it's something that's going to be a part of horsemen's lives for the next however long. John, there was a question like that. A lot of people had some questions about whether or not certain people in the barn were quote unquote covered persons, and like who had to register and who doesn't. I don't know. You talked to Mark Cassie a lot. Has the trainer's side of it been a little bit more complicated?
Yeah, and I've spoken to a couple of trainers about it as well. And really, the onus, the burden of registering the horses is actually wherever they're domiciled. So if our horses are, with Mark Cassie, Mark actually has to go ahead and register all those horses that are under his care. For horses of ours that are, with other trainers, obviously they're the ones that are going to be have the burden of doing it. And I say burden. My understanding is that it's even quicker to register a horse than it is to register an individual. One of the things that I think will help the audience a little bit is there's a whole section with regard to registering horses. There's a whole section of veterinary questions and when was the most recent Coggins done and things like that. And my understanding is that as of this moment, HISA is not requiring the veterinary information or the Coggins dates or anything like that. In order to register the horses. So they're trying to expedite the process so that way by July 1st, when you enter horses, that the entries will be accepted. And again, technically, you actually have to have your horses registered a week before July 1st because you have to enter them. And as we know, the entry process is usually 3 to 5 days in advance. So for trainers out there, you want to make sure that you have those horses registered as soon as possible. And if you have horses that are on training tracks, then you have to talk to the manager of the training facility. If it's a licensed facility, then they would have the burden. If it's an unlicensed facility, meaning that the breezes that occur there aren't published, then it's the burden is on the owner. So you just want to make sure that you have all that situated and set up. Obviously, if you have horses on training facilities, that aren't going to be running anytime soon, I wouldn't worry about it too much. And then once they hit the racetrack, have that trainer go ahead and register that particular horse for HISA.
Gotcha. All right. So if anybody wants to register, if you're a horseman or if you have any contact with horses regularly, you got to register by July 1st. It's HISAUS.org/registration. And like I said, I appreciate John coming on. But also, if you have any further questions, there's a good chance that Dan Ross has answered them or at least tried to answer them in that the recurring TDN segment. So, John, my, it's great to have you on. And again, my congratulations on the Breeders' Cup thing. We'll see you next week, buddy.
All right, great. Hey, Joe, before and Bill, before you let me go, I just wanted to say that, you know, I am very excited and humbled to be elected onto the board. And I really, truly, genuinely think this, that if it wasn't for the TDN Writers Room podcast, which provides, you know, all of us with a platform to express our feelings and stuff, there's no way that I would even be a consideration. So I want to thank you guys and obviously Patty Wolf, Sue Finley, and the rest of the team for propping me up and giving me a platform to be able to say, you know, my feelings and I can't thank you guys enough. And there's a lot of people that I want to thank, but I know we're out of time. So just everyone who supported my candidacy, I really, really appreciate it. And just if you have any questions or anything like that about the Breeders' Cup, please feel free to call me. You have a friend on the board.
Just don't become too big for the show now, John.
I can't promise that. I think my rates are going to have to double, maybe even triple, depending on it. But, you know, if we have more cartoons drawn on us, that is satisfaction and compensation enough for me.
That's the thing. It's a big day for us. Our little John's all grown up on the Breeders' Cup board, and we got caricatured by Remy, which we'll show you later. The TDN Writers' Room was brought to you by Lane's End. This week's Lane's End Stallion of the Week is Twirling Candy. The son of Candy Ride was represented by Grade 3 Regret winner Walkathon over the weekend. In April, he had the Grade 2 Charlie Whittingham winner Beyond Brilliant. He's a top 15 general active sire in the U.S. and stands at Lane's End for $60,000. Go check him out. Obviously a great family and a horse that really, I think, can get, you know, turf, dirt, short, long. Definitely a very versatile sire, as you would expect from a son of Candy Ride. So go check him out. We'll be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Honor Code, a multiple Grade 1 winner from the final crop of the legendary AP Indy. Never off the board in 11 starts. He was crowned a champion older horse before retiring. Now he is living up to the promise of his pedigree. With progeny like Grade 1 winners Honor AP, Max Player, and Maracuja, and multiple six-figure yearling sales, Honor Code stands to continue his sire's legacy at Lane's End.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. Kentucky breds are having Grade 1 success all around the world. Three-year-old filly Above the Curve ran her rivals off their feet last Sunday to win the Group 1 Prix St. Hilaire at Longchamp. And this weekend, each of the eight contenders in the Belmont were bred in Kentucky. So 100% success rate coming up for Kentucky breds in the Belmont. You can find your next Kentucky bred this week at the OBS June sale, which John is at. So obviously those Kentucky breds are going to continue to have success all over the country and all over the world. Yesterday, we talked to West Point CEO Terry Finley about Flightline, obviously the most look forward to horse, I think, in many years. We were talking about how it's kind of like a countdown to a blockbuster movie. It's finally coming out. So obviously we're very excited for that. And Terry was very excited. So check out our interview with Terry Finley. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. You can learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled to welcome back to the show the CEO of West Point Thoroughbreds, probably doing his 150th interview this week at this point, Terry Finley. Welcome.
It's great to be on, you guys. Really good. I can't believe it's finally here. We've been waiting a long time for this. As the weeks kind of rolled by, I was like, when are we ever going to get into the category of days instead of weeks? And now we're here. So
we are here. I kind of feel like it's like a big movie release. Like we've been counting down the months to see this movie come out. And now the blockbuster is here. So let's talk about it. You've run a lot of big horses and a lot of big spots. You're an experienced guy in this industry by now. How does this rank, the excitement level going into Saturday for Flightline and the Met Mile? How does that rank compared to all the other starters you've had at West Point?
Yeah, it's at the very top, Joe. At the very top. You know, I was thinking about our talk today, and you know, one of the things that I know that the partnership has done a very good job of is all of us, we stayed humble. You know, humble is the word, you know, and is the key to this because. You know, when you think about the race on Saturday, Like, it's not a gimme. I wish it was, but it's not. They don't give $1 million away for free, and we've got two Grade One winners in there, a Breeders' Cup winner, and I think Speaker's Corner, you know, one of the most talented horses that we've seen in a while. So, I mean, you know, in terms of emotion and your thinking, I go back and forth, but I know we're going to have to show up in a big way on Saturday, and I think we will, but man, it's going to be a heck of a race.
Hey, Terry, thanks for joining us. Do we know how good Flightline is? And if not, will we know come Saturday afternoon?
No and yes.
Okay.
Bill, I mean, you know, we've been at it a long time together, and we've known each other. So, you know, look, I would love to think that he's a horse that after today and say after his next race that conjures up, you know, the emotion and the memories of other horses that all of us has grown up around and know by their reputation. You know, I certainly hope that he's in that league, but he's got to do it, especially on Saturday. I think this is a really, really big stepping off point for his career. So, you know, we think he's a good horse. We really do. We think he's so exciting. It's, you know, great for the business, for the industry to get this kind of excitement rolling. And right. But they got to do it on the racetrack. And you know, that's what we keep thinking. But I tell you, the adrenaline, the anticipation, and you know, I hope that we're in the midst of greatness. I really do. And right. Because I think that would be good in so many different ways for our industry as a whole.
For sure. And I always have this question about West Point on big days, because you guys, I think you're a very like festive, celebratory group. Obviously, you have a lot of partners. What is it like on a big day, on a big Saturday? How many people are you expecting? And do you have room for one more guy who has zero investment capital but can recite the West Point ad copy in his sleep?
I can. You're in. You're in like Flynn, as they say in Ireland, Joe. But you know, we have a lot of people. I mean, you think of it's a really cool partnership. You start with the Heronesses, you start with Jane, or you go to Jane Lyon and Summerwind, you go to West Point team, you go to Woodford, and you go to Sienna Farm, which is Anthony Manganiello. And you think about the fact that he's going to have a 2-5 or 3-5 shot in the Met Mile, and then right backed up, you know, he's going to have the favorite in the Belmont Stakes. So I'd love to talk about him, because I think he's one of the most interesting guys in our business, and he's just a guy who gives and gives and gives. But you put all those partners together, and there'll be several hundred people there. And I hope this colt and the Sadler team, I hope, you know, they give us all a chance to rejoice and to really savor in a respectful way, you know, the greatness that we hope we see on Saturday.
Hey, Terry, I understand that this is a business, and, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to make money and also for your partners. I also understand that the game has changed a lot over the years. I also understand that Flightline has had a couple hiccups along the way, but I am guessing, and correct me if I'm wrong, that he's probably going to have six career starts. The Met Mile will be his fourth. Then we'll look at one race in between the Met Mile and the Breeders' Cup Classic. And again, you know, you're a businessman, your partner's a businessman. He's going to be worth, if he wins Saturday, $17 zillion as a stallion. But you know, you're a guy who thinks of the bigger picture about the industry. Should owners feel more of an obligation to run these horses more, maybe run them as four-year-olds? He is running as a four-year-old, but it's essentially like his three-year-old year since he was late to get going. It would be such a gift to the industry to see this horse run more often and run next year. If you could just explain that dilemma and your feeling about it.
Yeah. I think it is a dilemma, Bill. I really do. And I have thought about that, because I know when I see other owners and other trainers and they have really top end horses, I project, I think about what I would do. And, you know, I think now we're in this spot. So listen, you know, I don't dictate, cause I'm not the majority owner, but I know one thing, there are people that are in this horse that love to run and that are on the racetrack. And I can tell you this ride has been so thrilling, and the anticipation and just the juice that I think all of us have gotten. If there was ever a situation, I'd like to think that, you know, you're talking about 2023. I mean, we haven't really talked about it in a formal way, but man, would that be good for the, for the industry? If we continued on, yes, it would be. And I'll leave it at that. I can't talk for the whole partnership, but man, we're a racing partnership, and we have one of the best horses that has come along in a long time. So I'll let you figure that out. I'll let you work through it, but no decisions have been made to go one way or the other.
What's next for Flightline? Assuming he runs well in the Met, is the Whitney up next after that?
You know what? I'm not kidding here. I really have not posed that question to anybody in the partnership or to John Sadler. I know he's been thinking about it, and I know, John Sadler, I tell you, couldn't believe the adulation that and the respect that I've gained. I've always loved him. I've always thought he was a great trainer and a great person. But, to see him perform over the last 18 months has been just outworldly. And I'm sure he's thinking about it. And I would think that that's probably one of the issues, if things turn out on Saturday, that we're going to talk about shortly after. But, obviously he's thinking about either Del Mar or Saratoga. And I'll leave it up to him, because he's made the right choice, step after step after step. So we'll put our trust and our confidence in John and his team to do the right thing by this horse. But, I also love the fact that when I see the pride of ownership that John and his team, I think of Juan Leyva and everybody else, all the way down to the Hot Walker, and the pride and the way that they swell up when TVG or some of the other outlets are around the barn. It warms the heart when you see people that put so much into our game, and now they get a shot to take out that pride, and it's a really cool thing. So I'll leave it at that.
Gotcha. I mean, I know John Sadler and the Horonises are California guys, but I got a sneaking suspicion I'll see y'all at Saratoga if he runs well. All right, Terry, one last question for me, and this is something that's been a hobby horse for us on the show, especially me as a New Yorker, getting the Met Mile back on Memorial Day. We talked about it last week. If there were ever a horse who makes that argument that the Met Mile needs its own day, I think it's Flightline, because he's a horse that I think is going to be the most popular horse running on Saturday on a star-studded day of action. Shouldn't he be able to have his own day, and shouldn't the Met Mile be on Memorial Day? What do you think?
I think if I had to hit the button right now, Joe, I'd say I'm okay with it on a big day, because think about the electricity, especially if there was a Triple Crown. Obviously, I know there wasn't there's not a Triple Crown on the line, but that would be electric. And I think back to Honor Code's race, what was that, 5 or 6 years ago now? I mean, he was the talking horse, but I just love the electricity of the big days. And I look at the stakes, I look at the horse flesh and the horses that are going to run on Saturday. I know there is a really good case to be made for both. I just love these big days, but that's me.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, Terry, you mentioned it's going to be a big day on Saturday. And yes, it's going to be a really big day. But nonetheless, it is a Belmont Stakes where the Kentucky Derby winner didn't come back in the Preakness. The Preakness winner does not come back in the Belmont. And matter of fact, there'll be not a single horse had run in all three races. West Point was not involved in any of those three races, I don't believe. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Right.
But where do you stand on this issue? Do you think it's time to change the Triple Crown? Would you like to see more time between the races, and why?
Yeah, well, it depends who you've interviewed. A lot of smart people in the TDN, so it really depends on the last person that I read that I respect with their opinion. So, that happens in the business. So it does. I mean, I'd like to think I'm honest enough to say it just depends on the day of the week. I go back and forth. But I will say that the business is changing, just like every other industry in this world. And So I wouldn't be adamantly opposed to moving and to have some slight shifts. I don't think there should be an overhaul, but you know, there are plenty of other things that we've adjusted in our industry that a lot of people have said, whoa, 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 no, no, no. And then it happens and, you know, everybody's moved on to the next thing, i.e. trying to win races. So I think one or two minor tweaks, I think might be positive for the industry overall, but I don't come to our conversation in a very forceful way, because I certainly see the people who are passionate about keeping things as they are.
Listen, Terry, best of luck this Saturday. You guys deserve it. You guys spent a ton of money. You're great advocates for the game. You deserve a horse like this, and we can't wait to see him. So best of luck this weekend.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about that. I'll give you one quick, you know, I know we've given the game a lot, and we put our heart and soul, and I think about my team and everybody else, but we've gotten a lot more out of this game than we could ever give, and for that, all of us are very humbled, and we're excited, and you know, we're going to do everything we can to try to enjoy the next couple of days as we build up to the Met Mile and Belmont Stakes Day.
As you should. Thanks for the time, Terry. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Terry.
All right, Bill. All right, Joe. Thank you very much.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Terry Finley will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. This week's XBTV Workout of the Week, which you're seeing on the screen right now, features Grade 1 Santa Anita Run Happy, Santa Anita Derby winner Tabo, who put in his first work since the Kentucky Derby on Tuesday, going an easy 3 furlongs and 36-4 in company with a 4-year-old maiden special weight winner named Sumo. Tabo is a horse that's good to see back on the work tab so quickly, because we worried a little bit about kind of them rushing him into the Derby and, you know, what that might mean for him the rest of the year. So it's good to see him back on the work tab. Assume he's going to be pointed for the summer races at Saratoga. So definitely a horse with a ton of talent. And just because he didn't show up in the Derby doesn't necessarily say anything about the rest of his career. So we're looking forward to seeing him next on the racetrack. And if you want to check him out, go to xbtv.com. If you want to see Flightline's works, any of the Belmont contenders, they got it all. Just go look in that search bar for any horse that you want to see. It's obviously a big weekend of racing, so a lot of prep work and a lot of stuff to dive into if you're handicapping this Saturday's card at Belmont. So we can't go a week without our Trainers Behaving Badly segment, sponsored by Chico's Bail Bonds, as John suggested last week, and we maybe need the Bad Boys Cops theme over these segments. Trainer Peter Miller, this broke Saturday night, a little bit after 9 o'clock, which tells you how much they wanted this news to come out, that's when it came out. So Peter Miller has been fined $10,000 and suspended a whole 7 days by the Santa Anita Park stewards for violating the CHRB's rule against program training. This was a story. Obviously, we talked a little bit about it last week, but in the return of Peter Miller, you know, last year around November, he said he was stepping away from racing for 6 months. You know, he wanted to focus on his individual pursuits and you know, his health and blah, blah, blah. And everybody immediately assumed that it was because he had 5 horses break down and die in the past year in California, and that, you know, the CHRB and he had like a kind of a quiet agreement for him just to go away for a little bit and there wouldn't be like a giant fine or suspension. Turns out he was, according to this, he was program training. He was basically still the trainer for Ruben Alvarado, for who was his assistant. The least surprising news in the universe, which everybody assumed was going to happen. And this is the kind of thing, I'm not going to go too long because I know Bill has stuff to say about this too, but it's the kind of thing that we rail about on this show that you know, it's just a joke. It's just with the things that trainers are able to do, you know, even when they're supposedly, you know, on the sidelines, it's just embarrassing that he only gets 7 days, 7 days and $10,000 for, you know, going away and still training, even when he wasn't supposed to be. Come on, man. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe this. So first the news broke that, you know, that he had been caught red-handed doing this. It's not like it appears that he wasn't even really trying to hide what he was doing. He was hiding in plain sight. You know, he was basically, according to the allegations, training the string hands-on at San Luis Rey Downs. Now, that's not going to be as visible if he were at Santa Anita, but yes, I mean, there's hundreds of people there saying, hey, what's Peter Miller doing here? Oh, he's training 45 horses in the barn down here. When I saw this happen, I thought, you know, this is going to be really bad for him. I'm thinking a year suspension, maybe even more. And then he come out with 7 days. What? The problem here is, you know, maybe that's what it says on the books for quote unquote program training. But you got to look beyond that here. This was a deception of the betting public. You're betting on these races at Santa Anita. And, you know, you are told by the authorities, by the racetrack, by the California Horse Racing Board, et cetera, that they are trained by Ruben Alvarado, when in fact they were trained by Peter Miller. Now, that is deceiving the betting public. And first of all, it's slimy to use that word, but it's deceiving the betting public, which is just cannot be tolerated here. I mean, I don't have much more to say than they whiffed on this big time. And, you know, I cannot believe they didn't give him a more serious suspension. And also, Miller has a history of just like acting like the rules don't apply to him. And it's not just this. It's many things. He just flaunts it. Well, can you blame him now? You know, he came up with this whole story that I'm stepping away for 6 months and my mental health and I want to have more time with my family. And then none of it is true, which we all knew in the first place it wasn't going to be true, or we suspect in the first place. So CHRB, boy, I tell you, they really didn't handle this well at all.
Well, it's the Santa Anita stewards, I think, who handed down the actual suspension. And he's just one of those guys who has a history, you know, like that's on top of it, on top of what a disgusting thing this is. And what it's something that people in racing are so sick of, you know, this specific thing when trainers get suspended. Now, he wasn't technically suspended, but, you know, a lot of people assume that that was a soft suspension for him when he went away. So let's say for those purposes, he was suspended and he's still training horses just in his assistant's name. This is something that's been going on in racing forever and people cannot stand it, because even when there's, you know, a nominal punishment for a trainer, there is none, because he can still do the same exact things and just put the horses in his assistant's name. And it's like you said, it's deceiving the betting public for sure. But it also is just so unseemly. And it just points to the problem in racing that there's no actual enforcement, even when you can prove, maybe not in this case, but even when you can prove that somebody did something wrong, there is no actual enforcement. And, you know, it's interesting because we talked about this last week and about how Aiden Butler, you know, is kind of the new sheriff in town and, you know, throwing guys out of the track. You know, he got Richard Baltus out of here indefinitely. We'll see what happens with that. I'm shocked that, you know, a Stronach Group product that presumably Aiden Butler has a lot of say in could only suspend him for 7 days for something that should be a cardinal sin for a trainer in racing. You know, this isn't like Bill likes to say, this isn't some like small Bantamine overage that, you know, doesn't really make a difference here or there. This is a major, major problem for that trainers do this in this country. And this was a chance to make an example out of him. And they could not have made less of an example out of him. And it just points to the idea that, you know, he's going to be back at Santa Anita. He's not there right now, but he's going to be back there soon. And it's just going to be business as usual. And again, this is a guy who has fines after fines for medication violations and also has an incredibly poor safety record. You know, when we were talking all that about Bob Baffert and the Washington Post story about how his horses were breaking down more frequently than the average trainer in California. You know who was the other trainer at the top of that list? Peter Miller. And I think that there was a reason that he went away for 6 months and then obviously didn't. And it's because that he's a danger to horses in California more so than most other trainers. And, you know, that's even before getting into his history of drug violations and this scummy practice. What more does a guy have to do to, you know, show the stewards and show the CHRB that he's a danger to racing in the state? I don't know what else he could do.
Well, we talked about the California Horse Racing Board and what they did with Peter Miller. On the opposite side of the country, the New York Gaming Commission made more news this week. And the backstory is that there was a mess up on a claim of a horse at Belmont, a horse by the name of Battalion. And he was claimed for $25,000 and ran very poorly in the race. So the connections were delighted, I believe, that the horse was claimed. But there was a problem getting the information from one part of the racing outfit to the next. And lo and behold, nobody told the person who was responsible for taking the horse to the test barn that he was in fact claimed. So they took the horse back instead to his original trainer's barn, Bob Placeras. It was a mess up. It happens. They voided the claim, which, again, I don't think they should have done. But to me, the real story is how the New York Gaming Commission, what they did afterwards. And they fined Frank Gabriel, who is the vice president of racing operations for NYRA, $4,000 for this. Okay, number one, he had nothing to do with it. Number two, it's not really that big of a deal. Number three, I mean, I'm sure he makes a nice salary and everything, but for a guy that's not probably a millionaire or anything close like that, $4,000 is probably going to hurt a little bit. This is the latest thing we've seen from the New York Gaming Commission. It's like they want to be the Vladimir Putin of horse racing. You know, they are out there making these outrageous fines, doing these outrageous things, where they're led by Braulio Baeza Jr., their steward, who, you know, from what I can tell, I don't know him. He came around after I stopped going to the races and coming to the races there every day. But he sure appears to me as somebody that's a little bit power hungry here. Maybe not a little bit, a lot power hungry here. And I don't think we talked about it on the show, but remember when they fined the Clocker $2,500? Richie Gazer, great guy, has been around forever. Again, who didn't do anything wrong. He took a time of a work or distance of workout and changed it from 5 to 4 because it was this weird rule about the horse had to work 4 furlongs to get into a race. Again, did absolutely nothing wrong. You know, and there's another. So this is the third fine from the Gaming Commission of a NYRA employee. Keith Alschul, the racing secretary, was fined $2,000. I mean, what is Frank Gabriel supposed to do about this? If you're going to find him, why don't you find David O'Rourke? He's Gabriel's boss. Where does it start? I mean, why don't you find, you know, whatever. But, you know, look, it's funny because we're talking about racing commissions, you know, being not tough enough. I'm talking about a gaming commission that, at least when it comes to this, has gotten out of control with these fines and what they're doing here. And, you know, I hope these people get good lawyers. Probably Gabriel's not going to want to fight it because it would get ugly. You know, the Gaming Commission fining one of the two or three most powerful people at the New York Racing Association. So, you know, but something needs to happen here. I mean, this is just getting out of control. And, you know, I feel bad for these NYRA people that, you know, if the Gaming Commission doesn't like the way they have their tie tied, I think fine them $1,000 for that. I mean, it's ridiculous as it sounds. This has gotten ridiculous with these guys.
Well, it just seemed like something that could have been, you know, hashed out with like the discussion, you know, the voided claim thing, and be like, oh, well, he was late to be notified. The claim should, you know, should be voided still. And there was no need for the Gaming Commission, I think, really to get involved at all, much less find someone who wasn't, you know, even really directly responsible for what happened. And you mentioned the thing with the Clocker too, like that. That made no sense. The rule makes no sense because they have, you know, what Bill's talking about is they have this rule in New York where if a horse has like a poor performance, you know, gets beaten 25 plus lengths or whatever, gets placed on like a poor performance list and then has to work in a certain time to be able to get back into the entries. And the horse worked like, what was it, 5 furlongs and like,
well, Joe, the key is, right? For whatever reason, again, it makes no sense. The workout has to be at 4 furlongs.
That's what I mean.
Why?
Yeah.
And this horse actually worked 5 furlongs. Isn't 5 furlongs a better barometer of a horse's fitness and ability to perform in a race than a 4 furlong workout? So, yep. You know, back to the Clocker. Should he have done it? Probably not. But my goodness, talk about no big deal. And first, number one, change the rule. It's ridiculous. Number two, you know, the guy didn't do anything wrong. And you're going to, you know, go after his reputation, suspend him for 30 days and fine him, you know, $2,500. Come on now.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's a stupid rule, and it, like you're saying, it makes no sense. You'd rather have a horse work 5 furlongs than 3 furlongs. 5 furlongs, at least theoretically, mm-hmm. will display more fitness than a 3 furlong work would. So I think you should be encouraging longer works to get off that list instead of shorter ones. So the rule makes no sense. But also, this is, you know, both of these instances are are ones where you need common sense and not a guy who seems like he's looking to find people. Like, I think you need someone who has a sense of what's going on and is like, okay, well, that seems a little unfair. We'll work with you and maybe we'll change these rules over time. But in general, like, that's not how gaming racing commissions work. You know, it's like you're saying, it's a very weird kind of contrast between some of the toothless gaming and racing commissions who don't do anything, it seems, about trainers who are cheating the game and cheating the public and cheating the horses. And then you have a guy on the other side of the country who's just like itching to find somebody, like, you know, some lower level, or Frank Gabriel's not lower level, but like somebody below him who we can bully around with a fine. It's very, very weird.
Yeah, I mean, again, and I'm repeating myself, but it is, I'm so flabbergasted by this. Frank Gabriel had nothing to do with this, nothing at all. It just doesn't, you want things to make sense. First of all, the rules don't make sense. And then how what they do to people that in their minds violated the rules doesn't make any sense. At the end of the day, I mean, I don't think that it's incompetence. I really don't. Just think, you know, sometimes you give people a little bit of power and they get punch drunk with it. And I think that's what's happened here.
Well, and the weird thing, too, is Braulio Baez is a Hall of Fame jockey.
No, it's his son, Joe.
Oh, his son. Okay. I was about to say, even so, it's from a racing background. Right. You know, it's not as if there's just some bureaucrat who has no connection to racing coming in and, you know, hyper literally interpreting the rules. This is a guy who knows these, who should know these things, and it still doesn't have enough, you know, common sense, or is too power hungry to, you know, sort it out in the right way. It's bizarre.
And also, I mean, remember that Sue Finley wrote the story of a friend of ours, the young man who wanted, as a college graduate, who, you know, had impeccable credentials, wanted to be a jockey agent. They told him he couldn't be a jockey agent because he hadn't worked on the backstretch beforehand. What? What does that have to do with being a jockey agent? And on top of that, at least half the jockey agents at Belmont didn't work on the backstretch before they got in there. Again, you know, who sits around? They have a vice president in charge of coming up with dumb rules. You know, it sort of seems like it, doesn't it?
Well, this was the what was it? The married couple?
That too, yeah. I mean, what? You know, married jockeys can't ride against one another. If they do, they have to be coupled. You know, you don't even know what to say because it's just so ridiculous. Like, come on, you know.
Oh boy. Register for HISA, people. Let's make these
racing. By the way, Braulio, if you're listening, you can't find us, pal. So don't even think about it. We're not licensed.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. We talked to Terry Finley yesterday, and I tried to kind of finagle myself into that world of instant camaraderie and get myself into the flight line viewing party with West Point, because obviously I'm super excited to see him. And I, you know, we talked to Terry about, you know, where does this rank on the level of excitement that you're feeling going into this race compared to all the horses you've had, because they've had horses in the Derby and the Breeders' Cup. He said it was right at the top. So that's not surprising, but it's going to be great to see him this Saturday. And like I said, he's the horse I think most people, most racing fans are looking forward to on Saturday, which is why it should be on Memorial Day. But Terry didn't agree with me on that one. But West Point also had a winner at Woodbine on Sunday, Turned Aside, who's owned in partnership with our own John Green's DJ stable, got back on the winning side. And so congrats to all the connections there. And it's going to be a huge, huge day on Saturday for West Point. Good luck to Terry and all the partners. They really deserve it. They put a ton into this game. They deserve to have a horse as well. And obviously also the other partners on Flightline as well. Good luck to them. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse. Every step of the way, when it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Reminder that the entry deadline for the Facing Tipton October sale is July 15th. Legacy has sold the year's number one or number two highest priced yearling by a sire five times at this sale. So give Tommy or Wendy a shout to talk about that. And after this weekend, Legacy sales grads have now earned over $139 million. Worldwide. So obviously a great, great small business that can compete with the big boys, and check them out at the upcoming yearling sales right around the corner. All right. So we know we've made it now in the writer's room, because we have become a Remy Bullock caricature. I'm going to throw this up right now, and I think it's going to be in the TDN on Friday. It's a little bit of a computer screen, a laptop screen with me, John, and Bill in caricature, and then Richie, who is Rich Shrike, who is, you know, bemoaning the fact that we gave him no chance in the Derby. He says, I believe the exact words you guys used were no chance. That's a lie. We didn't mention him at all. No chance would have been an upgrade from our opinion of Rich Shrike going into the Derby. So I think that he gave us a little bit too much credit. But shout out to Remy, because that was fun. That was fun to see in my inbox last night. I think he's obviously great. And as much as Bill looks like Bill Belichick in here, John looks like the ghost of Christmas past, I think it's a pretty good approximation of us on this show, and we appreciate Remy. And yeah, I might print that and put it on my wall, because I've been looking at Remy and Peb's cartoons forever. So it's great to be in one. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. Don't forget, the Keeneland September Yearling Sale begins Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Terry Finley, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Enjoy Belmont Day, everybody. We'll see you next week.